You're listening to the Founder Coach Podcast, a show that investigates what it really means to be the CEO of a fast-growing tech company. My name's Dave Bailey, and I coach founders that raise capital from the world's top venture funds to fuel their business. And I'm sitting down with CEOs to talk about their experiences, the challenges they face, and the lessons they've learned, or are learning right now. Hello, founders and friends. How are you doing? How are you really doing? That's a question that I'm sure today's founder has asked many people in pursuit of his company's long-term mission, which is to create a world where mental health is viewed the same as physical health. Welcome to James Routledge, the founder of Sanctus, which is a company that helps employees improve their mental health at work. He is a serial founder, a writer, a social media guru, and advocate to all things mental health. James Routledge, welcome to the show.
Hey, Dave. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's really good to have you. We have a lot to talk about. And before we jump in, how are you really doing?
In this moment, I feel quite relaxed, actually. Having one of those mornings where I'm quite grateful to be working from home. I was in the office the last couple of days, moving out. And now if I leave my flat more than two or three times in a week, I feel absolutely exhausted. So I'm quite grateful to have just had a slow morning and quite a clear day. We've got a no internal meetings week at Sanctus this week. So got a lot of white space in my calendar, which is always good. And yeah, also quite looking forward to this podcast. It's come at a good time for me. So I don't know what, but I'm half expecting myself to be sharing something that I've not shared. I always find that on podcasts, I sort of come away having learned something about myself that I didn't know before. So I always really value the opportunity.
There's something about a podcast and having someone ask questions with the intention of giving you space to think them through. That's probably a bit similar to a therapy or a coaching session, right?
Yeah, although a little bit different, I think. Obviously, you've done a lot of coaching and therapy, and the purpose there is for you to heal or grow or reframe something or pick up some practical ways of moving forward, where sometimes a podcast can be a bit more investigative and interrogate a little bit more. So I think it can force you to answer something instead. So definitely feel therapeutic and quite self-indulgent really as well, which is not always a bad thing.
Let me indulge you. I remember when we first met, which was right around the time you were having the idea for a company like Sanctus and seeing the need for it. Fast forward to today, Sanctus is working with hundreds of companies. How does that feel?
Pretty surreal, to be honest. For the last 5 years, Sanctus has been based in the T building in Shoreditch. So when I started my first business, I think I actually went through the liquidation in the T building, crashing at a desk in a mate's office. I was so raw after shutting down my first business and so low on confidence, really. My pride was shot. And I felt pretty worthless and like a bit of a nobody. I think I'd moved down to London. I was 24, 25. A lot of bravado in the startup world, a lot of noise. And I just felt like a bit of a loser. Like I just thought, I don't know anyone. I'm trying to get in and I'm not in. All I've got is this one failed business under my belt from investors no one's heard of. And yeah, so I felt pretty low, really. Have I got what it takes to start a business? Like, am I good enough? Am I capable? Can I actually build something people want? Like I was really questioning that. I'd obviously given it a good go straight out of uni for 4 years and failed. Like we never built anything really that anyone cared about. So I really wasn't sure if I could do it. And then 5 years on, I've definitely built something that people care about and that works and is extremely impactful, but also still feel the same on some level. Like still doubting myself. It's not that big, you know, we've not done it yet. So yeah, feeling proud of what we've built, but definitely still feel like I've got a point to prove and maybe a bit of a chip on my shoulder as well. And then still got that same hunger and that same self-doubt or still question myself. So I feel very different to how I did 5 years ago, but I still feel the same on some ways as well.
I'm sure a lot of the founders listening will relate to that feeling of doubting yourself and questioning whether you've got what it takes. And I think there's probably a link between those feelings and the drive that it takes to build a business. Those feelings generate a lot of energy, which can then be directed to something productive. Does that land for you?
Yeah, it does. I think what I've learned and reflected on over the last 3 or 4 years is that there are a lot of different motivations in starting a business, I think. And I certainly had more than one. And I think possibly I was only conscious of one or two. And then there was some other unconscious motivations that were driving me to start Sanctus as well, and then to build it in the way that I did. I assume that's true for everyone, wanting to solve a problem. And I wanted to solve a problem for myself, right? I was struggling with my mental health. I didn't know where to turn. I wanted to create a product, a brand, a space that I could go to, I could open up in a safe environment, and I could talk to someone. And I created that, created Sanctus group spaces, Sanctus one-to-one spaces. I got a lot of value from that product and its positioning in the market. And then also thousands of people have gone on to benefit as well. There was other motivations there as well. Like I said before, I felt like a bit of a nobody at the start. So I think there was also, and possibly still is, like an ego there, wanting to be a somebody, wanting to be known, wanting to have an audience, wanting to be asked to go on panels, on talks, on podcasts. And then, you know, more recently, I think money has become a motivation that I wasn't aware of. I never thought about money when I was starting Sanctus, about my own personal wealth. Genuinely didn't consider it at all. Maybe as I've got a little bit older, I've started to think about that. So that started to come in there as well. So I think the whole point to prove chip on the shoulder definitely creates some drive and some hunger. And I think there's a lot in there that also deserves exploring that maybe I wasn't aware of.
You have a real ability to self-reflect and also share very clearly your experiences. What are your approaches to self-awareness, and are there any techniques that you've come across that work well for you?
I've had a coach of some sort for 5 years. I was in therapy for 18 months, once a week, maybe a slight break in between, but that was definitely a profound experience of really deep exploration.
Could you share what type of therapy it was?
It was integrative. So my therapist was trained in a humanistic school, not CBT, which is typically a little bit more of a model that you're following. This was much less directive, not lie back on the couch and talk about your mum and dad. I did do a lot of that, but I was also punching pillows and stuff at one point. So doing coaching and therapy over the course of 5 years just changes you and provides a level of insight and self-knowledge that I think you can get through other practices. But in my experience, it really accelerates it. I've started a mental health business. At the end of the day, like, surrounded with coaches, psychotherapists, leading practitioners. So I think just through osmosis, I've been in a quite reflective culture where at Sanctus as well, like the way we built the business was that your experience, your emotions, they are welcome in our workplace. Like, they're not separate. In a lot of businesses, it's like, hey, let's look at a spreadsheet of all the metrics and let's just be very rational. And there's not much space for the irrational or the emotional. And I think the way we see it is your emotional experience at work is just part of the data set of what's going on. So we'll bring a lot of that in as well. So I've been in the culture. But then I think there's probably two other things. Journaling. I journaled every day for 5 years, kind of morning and night. And that's, again, that is a reflective process. So it helps you put words to feelings and to articulate, and writing for people to read. I've written a newsletter for about 5 years as well, almost every week, and share a lot on social media. I think reading fiction as well. I don't really read nonfiction books. I'm reading like Robinson Crusoe at the moment. I think the ability to empathize with a story and get lost in a story can really help, again, create empathy and like another perspective and way of viewing things. So I've meditated on and off. I don't know if that supports the ability to reflect, though. I think it's got different benefits. But in terms of knowledge of self and ability to reflect and articulate maybe your experience, then I think, yeah, the practices I've just described have probably been the best for that.
One of the themes seems to be connection, whether you're writing your thoughts down on paper, which is a form of self-connection, or even through fiction, you can connect with the characters in a way that sort of reflects back at you emotions and so forth. That connection is important, isn't it, for getting into the space where you can connect with yourself ultimately?
100%.
So you started the business in part to scratch your own itch and meet a need that you were looking for. But since then, your business has worked with thousands of people, each with their own needs too. So I'm curious how your understanding of the need that Sanctus meets has evolved as you've worked with more and more people.
5 years ago when we started, the conversation around mental health was still very underground. It was even more stigmatized than it is now. the first like founder meetups we would do or the events we would do, they were like Fight Club, you know, like people would walk in glancing over their shoulder, like, is anyone going to know I'm here? People wouldn't put that they were going to Sanctus events in their calendar because they didn't want other people to see. People were quite secretive about it. So really the rallying call back then was just, we all have mental health. It was like, look, this is just normal. It wasn't that specific. It was just, we all have mental health, which is quite a primitive and basic like marketing line when you think about it. Not to do it a disservice at all, but it's pretty simple. We all have a human experience, basically. We all have a mind, we all have a body, we all have feelings, we all have emotions. It's all interconnected. That's been the message. So we were really creating spaces for people to just start, you know, to just begin, maybe to just say, I feel for the first time, or open up for the first time, or bring a feeling that they've held onto for a long time, or an experience, because we've got a lot of baggage in our society still. Like, a lot of people just been holding onto stuff maybe for their whole life that they've had, whether it's a childhood trauma or an experience, or doesn't even have to be that severe, like a breakup when you were young, like stuff that's just not been worked through. And then I think today, where the mental health landscape is evolving and changing quite rapidly, the mental health providers need to start to become more specific around our intervention and what the benefits of, say, Sanctus coaching are over a certain type of therapy per se. People are coming with more education. They're like, yeah, okay, I know I've got mental health. I knew that a couple of years ago. Right, what do I do? And that changes in different demographics. You know, I think in a London startup demographic, you've got people that are a little bit more advanced, let's say, on their mental health journey, whereas maybe you travel to a different part of the UK and that message of we all have mental health is still really resonant.
It sounds like as the space has got more competitive and more crowded, that understanding your own positioning amongst other offerings, where do you sit, naturally comes up. What's your latest thinking on that?
Fundamentally, the product we offer is coaching. So we're not there to compete with therapy or counseling. And what we've done really well is we've created a model of coaching that draws on the robustness and the support structures that have often been put in place for therapy and counseling, whether that's around supervision or quality control or governance or risk. We've put a lot of that in place for coaching. And we're just really, we want to create a space that's very welcoming, very inclusive, very accessible for all types of people to begin a conversation around their mental health. Now, we're not in the mental ill health space. Sanctus isn't the right space for you if you are deeply distressed, or if you've had a psychotic episode, or it could be the first port of call if you had a panic attack the other day. You could go to a Sanctus coaching session, and in that space, you might contract and work with the coach to figure out, okay, actually, I'm going to go and see a therapist. And what support do you need to reach out to a therapist? You might need coaching on the fact that you think going to a therapist is weird. You might have two coaching sessions on even doing that. Our position is very much what a personal trainer would be in this sort of health and fitness space, going from low to medium or medium to good that way, you know, not a physiotherapist where you are healing an injury. You can heal and you can grow in a coaching space, but you're not fixing something that's like deeply embedded, because the boundaries of the space are just very different.
So recently you stepped down as the CEO to take on the title founder. So I'd love for you to unpack the story about how that came to be.
I started the business. It was born out of my story, my problem, my vision for the world. And then from there, started working with George again. Me and George started our first business together. So that felt great and exciting to be founded something together again. Me and George and our coaching team, two co-founders, you just do a bit of everything together. So I probably did brand marketing, products, fundraising when we needed to. George would do account management, sales, finance, ops, and then the people stuff we passed between each other when we had to. And then business grows, and each one of those departments over time just gets siphoned off to a new person. Someone takes away marketing, someone takes away account management, someone takes away ops. And me and George did a good job of that, but we definitely struggled at times. We held on to stuff too long. Even sometimes if we did hire people to take on those parts of the business, we maybe didn't devolve responsibility properly. People didn't feel like they could. Maybe they felt like we were being too controlling or whatever it might be. We also pretty much bootstrapped the business, like we didn't raise lots of money. So Our team has been really high talent, high potential people, but not loads of experience across the team. We haven't hired seasoned startup executives, people that built departments at Uber or Deliveroo, but we're starting to now anyway. Me and George did a good job of that, but struggled along the way because that's definitely a hard journey, I think, as a founder, like to continually make yourself redundant, basically, from certain roles. And everyone can rationally understand that. Okay, well, I want my business to grow, so I want people to be doing the job that I'm doing, but better. Great, of course, who doesn't want that? But the then uncertainty of what am I going to do? What's my role? Do I enjoy fundraising? Do I enjoy sales? Both George and I, at times, were left with jobs that we wouldn't have necessarily picked. We did them because they were left and someone had to. And there's no sob story in that. At the end of the day, you start a business, you own a business, you get a lot of the upside or the majority of the upside. It makes sense that you're the one that has to get their hands dirty doing stuff that you don't necessarily want to do. Speaking for myself, I wanted to build Sanctus that way. Like I wanted to get my hands dirty at everything. No regrets about that. But rather than the CEO, I'd just say I was the default CEO. Got to a point where you've got four or five people leading different functions in the business. The business has got functions now that need to start to collaborate and align. So the CEO, I think at a certain scale, does become an actual role. I think the founding CEO is very different to the scaling CEO. Founding CEO is just a builder, really. Whereas I think that the operational or the scaling CEO is a job in itself. It's people management, strategy, alignment, communication, running leadership team meetings, creating trust in a leadership team, being available, making tough decisions. It turns into a job. And I think probably for 6 months or maybe a bit longer, 9 months, 12 months, I was like, oh, a new challenge, like a new job to learn. And I really stepped into it. And we had to make a few cuts at that time and right size a little bit, make some difficult decisions. And that was hard, especially around people. I found that quite challenging. And I just wasn't enjoying it. Simple as that, really. I just didn't enjoy that job. I very much felt like I was putting on a bit of a suit to work. I wasn't putting on an actual suit, but I felt like I was starting to have to wear a bit of a mask and be someone I'm not. It became a bit of a persona for me that I felt like I had to wear. I even started wearing like loads of zip-ups. And fundamentally, I found it really hard and really not that enjoyable. And I felt like I was doing an all right job, but I didn't think I was doing a great job. And like with any other role, I thought someone could definitely do this better than me. In the end, for a mix of reasons, for Sanctus's benefit of having someone at the helm that is a seasoned operator that knew how to be a CEO and knew how to scale teams and grow a business operationally and set a strategy, that made a lot of sense for Sanctus. And then for me and my mental health and my relationships, it just made a whole load of sense as well. It was an easy decision to make in the end, but the lead up to it was very challenging because it brought up a lot for me about who am I if I let go of Sanctus. I'd let go in many different ways over the years, but letting go of the CEO role was quite a big decoupling, really, of myself and Sanctus. So it was pretty big. That's why it's quite rare. Not many founders do it at this stage.
What was it like to go through that period where it wasn't clear cut?
Very tough. I think actually going to therapy paved the way for me to do the CEO transition because I started to go to therapy, I think it was like October 2018, because I was just incredibly stressed and I just couldn't switch off from Sanctus. And I basically went to therapy and just said, I just don't want my life to be like this. I just cannot stop thinking about work. And it's just horrible. I just feel like I've got this TV in my head that just won't turn off. You know, lying in bed at night, thinking about cash flow, thinking about people. My head's hitting the pillow and I'm thinking about conversations I need to have or one-on-ones I need to have. And this is the experience of every founder, I think, to be honest, whether conscious or not. Because for a while, I just thought that was my reality. This is how it is. You don't switch off. It's a lifestyle. But I just had one night where I remember just like being asleep and just thinking, I just don't want to wake up in the morning. I just don't want to do this. And that thought was quite scary. I was like, that's quite an intense thought, really. I was like, right, I'll go and see a therapist, just talk about my relationship with my business and with my work. And I basically got to the point of, who am I without this business? If you take this business away from me, how would I feel? And I probably at that point, if you'd have taken Sanctus away from me 2 or 3 years ago, I would have felt exactly how I felt before starting Sanctus. I'd have felt empty. I'd have felt lost. I'd have felt like a nobody. And I was like, I don't want it to be like that. Like, I am more than my business. I am more than my business. I start businesses. I call myself an entrepreneur. I'm creative. I will always put a lot of myself into my work, but I am more than that. So I just went on this long process of picking myself apart and putting myself back together again. And it brought just loads of, like, I was pretty embarrassed. You know, I thought, like, can I not hack it? Is it because I don't think I'm good enough? And maybe do I need just some coaching around being a CEO? But fundamentally, I think the turning point for me was like, I don't want to do this job. I can do it, definitely. I back myself all the way. Like, I think I'm capable of being a great CEO, but I don't want to do it. Maybe it's an age thing also. I reflected on my age a lot, which again is something that I don't hear talked about really explicitly. Like, I only turned 30 a couple of months ago. Why do I want to be a CEO at 30? Maybe at 40, I might want to be a CEO. I'll have had a couple of kids or something, and I'll have had more life experience, and the thought of firing someone or, you know, making a tough decision won't bother me as much as it does now, because I've gone through other stuff, but just don't want to do it. Now I can laugh about it because it sounds really simple. Well, it's a job and I don't want to do it, so don't do it. But it definitely felt harder than that at the time.
Going through something like that forces you to clarify the boundaries between you and your business. It's like a divorce. Once you decide to divorce, you've still got to split the assets, right? Like, what parts stay with Sanctus, what parts stay with you? How has your understanding of the boundaries that we have with our companies evolved, having gone through that splitting process?
An individual's relationship with their work and their business, if they start one, can be just so complex. I just really don't think people reflect or think about it enough. And it can cause so much anxiety and so much stress and so many mental health issues for founders. I mean, we're just often holding so much. So I'm just really passionate about this topic now. I've felt so much of this firsthand. A place I've got to with regards to my relationship with Sanctus is that I think there's been three roles I've played in Sanctus. One is the founder, the person that starts it. I will always be that. I started it, my story, the history of the business. I will always have that role, whether I'm there, whether I'm not, whether the business moves on and doesn't reference me or fine. I'll always be etched into the fabric of the business in quite an influential way. But secondly, you then have a role in the business. So there's a role there. I might be the head of marketing. I might be the CEO, whatever. So that's another stage, I think. But then I think a big thing that has become so obvious to me recently, that I'm also an owner. The business is also an asset that I own. Now, I've never thought about Sanctus like that, but that's fundamentally true as well. You know, I own shares in the business. It's an asset that I own. So I'm the founder. I play a role inside it. And then outside of it, I own shares in it. And I think in terms of that relationship, I'm just much more conscious now of, like, the different hats you wear in different rooms. Like, if I'm on a board meeting, then my hat is, okay, I'm James Routledge and Sanctus is a business that I own a piece of, and I'm a director, and I've got a responsibility to myself, but also to the business, to do whatever the right thing. There might be other times when I'm in the room and I'm like, I am the founder of Sanctus. I started it. This is my story. There might be other times when I'm in a leadership meeting where I'm like, okay, my role in this room is to protect our culture or our vision or how we do things. And just much more conscious, I suppose, of, like, the different relationships I think we have with our businesses. And I think without that, it can get so messy. You know, you can be in a leadership meeting, but really I'm actually thinking about the fact that I'm the founder and it's a big part of my life, and that's the wrong space. So there's those three hats, I think.
And how did this way of thinking about it affect the way you took that decision?
It's created a lot more separation, I think. One of the reasons I struggled to be a CEO is because I really struggled to be objective, just too emotional, just too attached. Every decision felt like a personal attack on my identity, which is just not right. I was in the office yesterday and I was overhearing someone on the team talk about a problem that was going on. And, like, part of me just wants to flip back into old obsessive mode and just take what I've heard home with me and just ruminate on it. And like maybe send some sort of like frenetic Slack messages about it. But that ultimately isn't good for me and it's not good for Sanctus. The job now is to notice that and sometimes decide to act on it and other times decide to let it go.
Alex, thanks so much for jumping on the call. You are the CEO of StepSize. In a sentence, what does StepSize do?
StepSize is an issue tracker that lives in the code editor and helps engineering teams fight technical debt.
Now, you recently took the Clarity program. What motivated you to take Clarity?
Well, I'd collected loads of user feedback on our product and positioning and was a few months away from starting to fundraise again. And I wanted to take all our lessons and integrate them into a new narrative for StepSize, the company, but also the product.
Got it. Now, could you share some of your key takeaways from doing the program?
I loved working with storytelling templates. Having every aspect of StepSize written down into a short paragraph with clear sections to tweak for every iteration was hugely helpful in clarifying my thinking. On top of that, it was extremely helpful to bounce ideas and run our work past the community of founders who were also working through the program. I can't tell you how many great ideas I picked up from them.
And is there anything you want people who are considering Clarity to know?
Just do it. As a founder, I would recommend Clarity to any startup founder and CEO looking for a framework that they can use to clarify and constantly improve their company's narrative over its lifetime. My cohort included founders at very different company stages, and they all left with major breakthroughs.
That is awesome. Thank you so much, Alex. If you want to learn about how StepSize can help you with your tech debt, why don't you visit stepsize.com? And if you want to learn about what Clarity can do for your company, visit davebailey.com, click the links to Clarity, and get in touch. I would love to hear from you. Now, let's get back to this amazing episode. Now, you published a post in your personal blog called Founder, Not CEO, and there were a couple of lines in it that really landed for me. I'm just going to read out a few of them because I'd love to unpack them a little more. You wrote, "Founders with VC backers seem more likely to get stuck in the dream they sold someone and feel like they can't open up and be honest about their own fulfillment." What is it about taking VC money that leads to that phenomenon?
Ultimately, VCs are backing businesses that have the dramatic potential to exponentially grow. Decacorns, unicorns, whatever you want to call them, a one in a million business is started by a one in a million founder. They are started by people that I just don't even know what they're made of. I'm not made of that. I'm not, because it's the ability for the business to grow at scale, but for the founder or the founders to grow at rapid scale, to just do what it takes to do that. I just don't even know. I'm not even going to pretend to know what it takes to go through all the stages of a business's growth. I've gone from what you'd class as pre-seed to Series A, I'd like to think. But to go beyond that and to continue, I think Tom Blomfield from Monzo has been very honest about that. From ending up running a bank. That's the unicorn journey. That's like you go from starting a business to being the CEO of a 1,000-person bank. That level of growth is crazy. I think for venture capitalists, they are backing teams who can go on that journey. And I think that you raise venture capital money, especially in the early days, on a dream. You're selling a dream. And yeah, you've got to have probably an ever higher bar now of traction to back up that dream. But really, you've got to sell a very compelling vision that is a world-altering vision. And in my experience, it's much more common for the founder to become trapped in that. And for the story they're telling and the dream that they're selling to become their reality. And I think there's much more potential for that warped dystopia to happen. Definitely as a founder, and I've definitely stepped into this, much easier to believe your own hype. You can get caught in your own, like, basically thinking you're thinking you've raised a bit of VC money, someone's backing you because you've got this Steve Jobs-esque dream. See it all the time. Founders start dressing like Steve Jobs. They get a bit deluded, start walking around the office, barking orders, their ego takes over. Let's not blame VCs all the time, which is so easy to do, but founders can start getting very egotistical and believing. You know, we see it in the WeWork documentaries, right? You've watched it. You start believing that you are God, because VCs are looking for God. they are looking for someone to turn water into wine. So I think it's very easy for founders to lose sight of the ground. When you start creating that persona for yourself, it's very difficult to break out of that, especially when you build a world around it, when you've got a team that are like, oh my God, James is a visionary. All hail James, the visionary. That is very hard to break out of. But then at the same time, VCs know that it does take a visionary founder, a one in a billion founder, to build a one in a billion business. So they also don't want the founder to go anywhere. It seems to me that it's much more common for founders in VC-backed businesses to burn out because they can be more likely to live a lie, I think, to just be blunt. It can be much more common to live a bit of a lie because it can be hard to stay grounded and it can be easy to believe your own hype and to sell something that maybe started as a dream but turns into a bit of a nightmare. And what's real, what's not, what's true, what's not. Are we actually growing at 30% every month, or did we start fudging the numbers? Did our cost of acquisition start going through the roof, but really we're just driving revenue, but whatever, the growth's going like this, so I'm just going to keep selling that story. So it can create this strange dystopia of what's real, what's not. And I think founders can really get caught up in that.
You mentioned ego, and a nice definition of ego is where you seek validation, whether you seek validation with others or whether you seek validation with yourself. When you're founding a business, particularly if you're taking VC money, every founder who's ever raised money knows it is an exercise in rejection, right? You're getting no after no. And I think it's quite easy to seek that validation, that approval from a VC. That feeling when you get that yes, they're going to write you a £1 million check, is seductive. You just want that another hit of validation. I think part of what traps us is we're trying to avoid that feeling of rejection. And we just want the VC or the investor to say, James, you did great, right? I work with a lot of founders who I wouldn't class as egotistical and believing their own hype, but I can almost sense that feeling of stuck. And I think a lot of it comes down to where you seek your validation.
If I wanted to raise VC money for Sanctus, I would put on a turtleneck, create like an outrageous vision for the world. And I'd do that to some perspective, but that's how you do it. And I noticed that when I start doing that, it brings out a side of me that I don't like. I can become very just ego driven, basically. It's just very seductive. Somehow the VCs have owned the narrative that raising VC is success. Like, it's brilliant marketing, but like somehow there's so many founders that just don't think that they're worthy as a founder or their business is good until it's raised money from like a tier one VC, which is just crazy. And I don't know why, but I think maybe it's because the last 5-10 years, like, there have been lots of founders that have got famous, that maybe people are pursuing that on some level. But yeah, it's very seductive. And I think you're right. It creates a lot of validation to have someone believe in you. And I think a lot of us want that.
I guess in many ways, it's not so different from wanting to get some good logos on your CV when you leave university. And there's a kind of arc of growing up in many ways where I think part of what growing up means is seeking validation less from others and having an internal sense of who you are. And serial founder to serial founder, I raised VC money 3 times. My current business is bootstrapped. And the other thing you wrote in your essay was founders with bootstrap businesses or businesses that are profitable do seem more able to accommodate themselves and focus on their own happiness. And that also rang true with me.
Yeah, I don't think that's that groundbreaking. I think just by the nature of not having anyone else on the board or the ownership structure of the business, being owned by probably people that are in it, obviously it creates a dynamic where you don't have to answer to anyone else and whether or not external pressure's on you and you can do what you want, basically.
There's one other thing that I thought was truly fascinating, which was as you were going through shifting from the founder CEO to the founder and realigning your role around that. One thing you said was a lot of founders had said, well, all you need is a COO and get a COO to look after strategy development and alignment, look after the team. That's something that you hear a lot. What drove your decision to split it around founder and CEO versus, say, hiring a COO?
Definitely heard that one a lot. In my experience, it seems to me that the COO role is one of the only roles that is just completely different in every single business, because that role seems to be based upon 2 factors. One, what does the business do? Whatever the business does, the internal operations or the operational function is going to be very different, right? If you sell tables to if you're a B2B SaaS business. But then secondly, who's the CEO? Is the CEO all over the place, visionary, that's like amazing at fundraising and like proper Elon Musk, like PR specialist? Or is the CEO actually someone that is pretty technical or hands-on that knows the business inside out? So the COO seems to be a really bespoke role in every business. In another world, I could have called myself the CEO still and could have hired a COO to do the same job. However, for me, there was a couple of parts of the role that made what I was looking for more of a CEO. One was strategy. Typical COO, the usual thing is they get shit done. That's what everyone always says. Oh, my COO is amazing. They just get stuff done, which is great if you know what you want done. I didn't know what I wanted done. I was really struggling to take my big vision and condense into like a short to medium term strategy. I was finding even that hard. Big picture, okay, I want a world where people work on their mental health like we do our physical health, and I want mental health gyms on the high street. And I think every business needs to be supporting its staff with their mental health. That's about as detailed as I get. A CEO laying down a strategy felt really right. And also, I think another solve that I wanted was like to decouple myself, and I wanted to be able to let go. And I felt that if I didn't hire a CEO and I hired a COO, I'd just end up micromanaging the COO and I wouldn't let go. And I didn't want to be the ultimate decision maker. CEO is an ultimate decision maker in the business. The buck stops with the CEO. That was the reason that I did it that way. And every founder is very different. And there'll be some founders hopefully out there listening to this that are like, no, I want to be the CEO. Like, I want to set the direction. I want to be the ultimate decision maker. I want that responsibility to drive the business. But, oh God, getting someone to run the management team would be fucking awesome. And that might be a COO. So it's very different depending on who you are.
It's less common to see that kind of distinct founder and CEO role. A lot of the CEOs listening might actually resonate with it very strongly. It's unusual, but actually I think it solves a lot of problems for a lot of people. So great piece of thinking you've done there. And also strategy and people management are probably the two most common challenges that people on that journey from founder to CEO are facing. And so I developed a program just focused on strategy. And when I was thinking about that program, I had a seed early stage founder in mind, like carving out what is the strategy, how do I communicate it? But what I learned was there was a huge demand from later stage companies. Strategy, as you say, becomes more important, and understanding how to do it. There seems to have been a gap in the space.
My experience of that was that I think as the founding CEO, I think I was pretty good at strategy because it's basically what's the one thing we're doing and what aren't we doing? If you're really clear on that, you can galvanize people. That for me was strategy. You grow up a little bit. It's got to be more nuanced than that. It needs to be a bit more sophisticated. It's okay, like what are we focusing on? Why are we focusing on them? How does that align with our brand? How do we align all the different teams around that? It can't just be here's one thing.
The funny thing about strategy is that we talk a lot about growth, a lot about product. We talk a lot about marketing. But the level of conversation on strategy in the startup and entrepreneurial scene, bar a few, like maybe NFX is one of the blogs that actually talks about it in quite a sophisticated way, is completely barren. If you ask a lot of founders to define strategy, very few of them would get further than a one-line description, where we play, how we win, or it's clarifying the focus, right? Like it doesn't get a lot of airtime.
No, I think you're probably right there. The tech startup ecosystem is dominated by product tech. Marketing, but paid acquisition mainly, or content marketing maybe, but very sort of like growth hacking. No one talks about brand at all, ever. I don't think people talk about leadership very often either. People's getting more airtime, thankfully, because you're getting more like VCs are starting to have an internal talent team or internal HR that work with their portfolio. You're getting more bespoke HR kind of consultancies that'll airdrop into different businesses and support them. You know, someone that was the head of people at Deliveroo has now been like, oh shit, there's like 300 startups that need my help. Leadership, basically, strategy is one part of, just doesn't seem to be getting as much airtime as it needs. And I think, again, I mean, this is what our whole conversation's been about. Founder support is still quite in its infancy, really. I think more VCs are sort of, we need to support our founders. Let's pay for their exec coaching. Let's take them on a retreat. So that's happening, but it's still not massively common.
there's some parallels between what I'm going through right now, which is as I scale my founder coaching offering beyond me. And I agree with you. I think founder support is low. More on that later. So just to wrap up, I have a few quick fire questions that I'd love to run through with you. So what SaaS product have you recently adopted that's working wonders for you?
My personal website is actually built on Shopify because I have sold some art in the past, which I used it for, which was a bit of fun. And then when my book comes out, I'll probably sell my book on my website. And I mean, with Shopify, it's there to sell stuff and then create blog pages and stuff around it. It's probably more of an add-on, but I just found it really easy to use. So
what extremely specific piece of advice would you give yourself 6 months ago to avoid pain now?
Just chill out a bit. I think take my foot off the gas. I definitely can fall into a trap of feeling like I need to be busy, that if I'm not busy, I'm doing something wrong. Whereas actually the days where I don't just force myself to be typing on my laptop for no reason, I end up doing a quality of work that moves me or Sanctus forward more than I do on the days where I'm just busy for no reason. So probably focus on quality over quantity.
Which investor deserves a call out and why?
Oh, loads of our investors do, to be fair. All of our angels have just been amazing. Like, they just let us get on with it and then called us out, I think, when we've needed to. Probably three in particular, Doug Scott, Damien Lane and Mills, very, very supportive. And every time I catch up with them, I actually feel like they care about me more than they do the business, which feels really good.
What's the worst investor behavior that you have personally experienced during a fundraise?
Every founder will relate to this one. Not signing stuff on time. It's just a dick move. Just sign stuff on time. It's like the only thing that is needed. Just sign it on time. And the problem is, it's never a priority for them and it's your number one priority. But I think every investor should have the empathy to understand that it's life or death for the founder that they want it signed ASAP. And the investors that sign straight away, legends.
What's the hardest thing about being the CEO that no one talks about?
The psychological toil. And people are talking about it more, but still, I don't think to the extent that it's there. The obsession, the all consumption, the inability to switch off, not being present in your relationships, being there but not there, trying to watch TV at the end of the night, but really you're actually thinking about something tomorrow. It's the endless stress. And on top of that, maybe loneliness, I'd say. A lot of loneliness that I think is getting better also with more founder groups and founder support, peer support. But one of my mates once called it the perpetual state of loneliness, which has just always stayed with me.
What makes leadership team meetings trickier than they should be?
Lack of trust. In a startup environment specifically, nobody knowing what they're doing, but nobody admitting that they don't know what they're doing, which is lack of trust.
Fair enough. Well, look, I want to thank you so much for coming on the pod and just for your openness and vulnerability when talking about these issues. I really appreciate it. And I know the listeners will as well. What was it like for you to come on the pod?
Good. Really good. Hoping that this will reach another audience of other founders is really cool. Still just really passionate about mental health for startup founders. Being a founder myself, applying that to the complexity of starting a business, I'm just really passionate. And also seeing the issue, the problems that it can create in a business if founders are struggling with their mental health. It's a topic that only needs more conversation and light around it for me. So it's been fun and I'm glad. I felt like I could be a bit more specific knowing the audience.
If there are founders listening or people working at startups that are looking for spaces to talk through mental health issues, check out Sanctus and look at their corporate offering. I want to thank everyone for listening. I know there are a lot of founders that are going to identify with the stuff we talked about today. And in particular, the division of founders' relationship into those three categories, the role, the foundership, and the ownership, I think a very helpful idea. So thank you for sharing that with us today. Now, if you enjoyed listening to this podcast, go ahead and hit subscribe in Apple, follow on Spotify, or click the relevant button wherever you're listening to this. And join us next time where we'll be going deep with another high-growth startup founder. And until then, stay healthy and stay boundaried. I'll catch you soon.